It's very unlikely that a student would say to another student, "Excuse me, I didn't like when you pulled my hair. Please move your foot away from me so that I can sit up." We teach our children that language when they have executive functioning skills available, and we hope that those neural pathways can engage and our students can use that language in order to communicate and solve their problem. But it is much more likely that that downstairs brain is going to come out. It's going to say, "Ow, that hurt. My hair was pulled. I'm mad. I'm going to push this person back."
Welcome to the Society's Child podcast, where we have real conversations about being a trauma responsive educator in the midst of a significant mental health crisis. Hi, I'm Trish Senzek, a former educator, compassion advocate, and Jesus lover, and I'm so grateful that you're here. Are you feeling confuzzled about your students' behavior and needs? You're not alone. If trauma-informed strategies leave you wondering, what's next? Don't worry. My friend, I've been there too. As a foster mom and a child of complex trauma mixed with my experience as a teacher, it's led me to finding a compassionate, whole child approach that's evidence-based, practical, and transformational, and I'm so eager to share it with you. Whether you want to connect with your students on a deeper level, create a trauma-sensitive environment, or you just need a little bit of encouragement or support, you're in the right place. So grab a drink, a pen, or your earbuds, and let's work together to create a safe and student-attuned, trauma-responsive school culture. Society's children need you. So let's get started. Hey friends, I'm excited today to introduce you to a coworker, colleague, someone who's in the education field doing exactly what you're doing. And I love it because Jessica Turin has a lot to share about her experience. And so I've got two episodes for you. This is part one, and I'm excited for you to learn from her. She's got a background in trauma-informed education, and she has some great strategies to share with us. So let's get started. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to Jessica Turin. Did I say that correctly?
Turin. It's a very
Turin.
weird name.
Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. And I'm so happy that you're here. And I found Jessica online through a blog article that she wrote, and I thought she would be a perfect fit to come on today and talk to co-educators that are doing the same thing she's doing from a like-minded perspective, but she also has a trauma-informed background. And so I'm going to let her tell a little bit about where she comes from and what she's doing, and let's all learn from her. So Jessica, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So my name is Jessica Turin. I am a kindergarten teacher. I live in northern New Jersey. I work at a school called Eastern Christian School. I have been teaching for about 7 years. And in May of 2020, I received my master's in trauma-informed education. The long title is Trauma and Resilience in Educational Settings. And truly, I am just so passionate about working with students and meeting their needs, not just academically, but also socially, emotionally, mentally, all of the places where we love to see our children thrive and grow. So it's very strange, this field. There's not a ton of resources that are available from educators who are working in the classroom. And we know we've chatted a little bit about how those things kind of come together. So I found my way into this field in my very first year teaching. I was working with a group of students and realized pretty early into the year that I wasn't just there to teach them about reading and about addition. I was noticing that my students had so many social and emotional and spiritual needs that were far beyond what I had been trained to do in my undergrad. And so I was kind of feeling this awakening of, wow, this is something that educators need to be aware of and need to have resources for. When I thought about myself as a young child, my dad was in the military, so we moved around every few years. There was a lot of upheaval in my family life and in just different circumstances all around our world. But for me, school was always the safest place. No matter how many times we had moved or how many times I had to make new friends, I knew that in the classroom, I had teachers who understood me and cared for me. I knew that there were really predictable, safe routines, that there would be cause and effect for actions. And for me, that just created the most safe and warm feeling. And so I'm sure that's really part of the reason why I chose to pursue education for myself. So a couple of years into teaching, thinking about seeing these needs in my students that I didn't feel prepared to respond to, and then thinking about myself and growing up as a child who had experienced some stress, I found a program in trauma-informed education and realized, wow, this is really like the perfect marriage of understanding students' social and emotional needs, but how they work in school settings and how teachers can be informed and can be aware of how to best support their students. So I did a lot of study. I did a lot of learning about how children's brains work, how they grow, how they respond to stress, and then what educators can do in order to best support them, in order to build strong relationships and to create connections and to have healthy coping skills. So I now have been teaching for 7 years. My experience is in a lot of lower elementary, so kindergarten and first grade, and it is just such a gift to be with students who are so young, to be able to teach them from such an early age that this is how your brain works and this is how you can be in control of what it's going to do next. This is how you can take that feeling that you're feeling and give it a name and give it a response. And the whole time I am here to help you because I know you and I love you. And truly for me being able to work in a spiritual environment, I work in a Christian private school, being able to remind my students that their brain works this way because there is a God who made them and he understands them. He knows every feeling that they have felt and he is there to guide them as I am. So it really is for me just such a gift to be exactly in the place where God wants me to be, that I'm able to help shepherd my own students. And since pursuing my master's now, I graduated actually in May of 2020, which was a really fortuitous time in our whole nation. We experienced a collective trauma that changed a lot of things about our world. And so that opportunity has allowed me to share many resources with fellow educators, with other colleagues. And really, it's just been such a blessing to keep learning and keep growing more.
I always love listening to someone's journey to see, you know, how it kind of progresses along the way and what you've actually learned, and how interesting that it also happened that you graduated just as, you know, we hit that pandemic time when little did we know that we were all going to very much need it, very much. And your journey as an educator and then coming into this information, can you share with us some times and some things, realizations that you've had as far as like, what do you think are the most critical areas that educators and our students are actually in need of right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the biggest areas where understanding trauma-informed education has really just changed my entire teaching practice is going from a focus on myself to a focus on the students. And so I imagine when people think about a classroom, they think there is a teacher who is in charge. There are many students who do what the teacher says. The teacher sets the rules. The teacher tells them what to do. The teacher is delivering the information. It's all about the teacher. I found, particularly as a new teacher, when I was understanding my students in so many new ways, the focus couldn't be on me. The focus on me was just me trying to get attention, me trying to get control, me trying to look for my students to do what I wanted them to do. And really, as I learned more about trauma-informed teaching practices, I learned that the relationships that you build are the most important thing. The community that your classroom feels and that you create together alongside your students are going to change every moment of your day from there. So really a shift from the teacher is in charge of the classroom and they tell everyone what to do and say and move and act to this is something that we are creating together. I am your teacher and I am here to keep you safe and to give you boundaries and to help you grow. But also I am here to understand you. I want to think about why you do what you do. I want to help you understand what preceded that behavior? What feeling are you feeling right now? What coping strategy can we pull out so that we can help you have a more positive experience? What do we want our classroom to feel like as a community? It's not just that I want it to be quiet in here because I want my voice to be heard. It's that we have to help one another because if everyone starts talking at the same time, I can't hear what anyone is saying, and that's not fair to our friend who's sharing their idea. And so I think really the primary thing that I realized as I was learning about trauma-informed practices was the understanding of relationship, the understanding that all behavior from students is communication. And particularly when you're working with young students, it's difficult for them to say, I'm feeling really frustrated. I think I'd like to take a deep breath before I try this math problem again. But to be able to say, hey, I noticed that you crumpled your paper up. Seems like you're feeling frustrated. Let me help you. What can we do together to make this work well? So I would say that's definitely one of the biggest shifts that I experienced as I learned more about trauma-informed education.
I love that. What I'm hearing you say that kind of plays into the simplicity of the fact that I believe that this is all a human informed thing. You know, trauma informed is human informed. And I think the beautiful thing about this is that we're giving our kids literally a new language. I know it's a language I didn't have growing up. In fact, most of the time I was being told, you know, to shut up and sit in a corner or suck it up or move on or stop crying. And all the emotions and things were pushed away. And I think it's so beautiful because these kids are literally going to walk away with a new awareness, a new ability to communicate, things to think about, an awareness of their own body of how to approach certain situations. So can you think of a time in your situation or in your work that you've done, or even give us an example of, okay, so kids have new language, they're frustrated, they're going through something. How do you work them through that? And what's a way to help us understand, maybe even a practical way to help educators kind of go, okay, here's a way to give them new language, or here's a new way to help them with a particular situation that might be punitive, but may be able to turn it around into a way that's a little bit more trauma-informed.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm thinking of an example that applies probably mainly to lower elementary. So because I'm a kindergarten teacher, one of the things that we practice is what our body does in certain spaces. So when you're standing in a line, your arms are at your side. When you're sitting on the carpet, your feet are crisscross or mountain, they're close to your body so that you're not touching someone else's body. And those are things that, again, when I think about myself as an early educator and saying, no, you've got to sit, you have to sit safely, keep your hands to yourself, hands to yourself, hands at your sides, and thinking about how I was just seeking control over my students, that shift into a trauma-informed mindset is a shift that thinks, okay, they're moving their body, maybe they're expressing a need, maybe they're saying, we've been sitting on the carpet for 15 minutes and that's 1 minute too many. Maybe their body is saying, you know, I didn't get a good night's sleep last night and I'm just going to keep laying my head down on the floor because I feel tired and I can't say that. So I think one of the things that frequently we discuss in our classroom, again, when we're thinking about wanting to build a safe community, wanting to build a place where we see and understand each other. Hey, I noticed that when you laid your head down on the carpet, the person next to you had their feet kicked out. It pulled her hair. Let's talk about what happened, how we could have done something differently. Maybe if your feet were in, you would be safe in your space. If your head was up in the sky, then your hair would be safe. It would be touching your body. It wouldn't be on the ground. And really having that conversation where we want our students to start to say these things. Oh, I should have kept my feet closer to my body so they didn't kick someone. Really thinking about how we can guide them toward that mindset where they're thinking about what is in their control. They're in control of where their body moves, but also when they're feeling like they're out of that control. And I know we'll talk a little bit about their brain states and how we can get them into a place where they're in control. Again, just how we can make that a positive interaction so that we go away from it, not, as you said, sit down, be quiet, stop touching her, but a situation where that child feels like, oh, I'll keep my head up. Then I won't have my hair pulled. If I sit up strong and tall, I'm going to feel really good. And they're coming out of it feeling positive, feeling like they have control over the situation and that they're positively contributing to our community. They're making it a safer place where people's hair doesn't get pulled because they're sitting up safely.
You're elementary. And so I'm high school. So I'm thinking, you know, for the ones that are on the other end of the spectrum, you know, how would I do something like that in a middle school or a high school classroom? We know that they don't like to be singled out a lot unless it's very private conversation. So I might tend to have a conversation with the whole class on something along the lines of, let's think about what the other person might be feeling, or we might do some role plays or group conversations, or I might if I did need to pull the child aside or say something to them privately, thinking about, yeah, you're trying to be a really good friend, or, you know, how would you want to be a good friend, or how would you want to be treated? Ultimately, it's about the relationship, right? Trying to engage that child or engage the classroom, giving that family feel or giving that pep talk feel so that it doesn't feel punitive, it doesn't feel shaming, it doesn't feel spoken down to, but it's, hey, let's think about everybody. Or, and sometimes with the middle school, high school, sometimes we even have to take it a step further and ask them their opinions on, well, how would you like to be treated? Or what would make sense, you know, for you? And some of these kids don't have that language. If it's kindness is not being modeled at home, where are they getting it? And they may not even know what that really looks like. So hearing their peers speak that out is a great way to kind of do that. Thank you for that. That allows us to kind of piggyback on both of those. So if you have a kid, let's say that the kid gets their hair pulled, or, you know, the kids are getting pinched or poked at or pushed at, or someone took my seat, or I want to sit there, whatever the situation is, it sometimes escalates in our bodies, right? Talk to us a little bit about what's going on in terms of the brain, and how is that happening, and what's the science going on in between the body and the brain there?
Yeah, absolutely. Part of my study, I learned about something called the hand model of the brain, which is a really great way to conceptualize that our brain has many parts and those parts do different jobs. So it's a little tricky in an audio medium, but just to give you a visual, if you have your hand out in front of you with your fingers open, put your thumb over your palm so that your four fingers are up in the sky. And this is what we call our downstairs brain or the lower brain. This is the part of your brain that controls automatic functions, things like breathing, digesting your food, blinking your eyes, all things that you do automatically without thinking to help you function, to keep you alive. Then if you take those four fingers and cover them over your thumb, almost so that you're kind of making a fist, this is the upper part of your brain. These are your prefrontal cortexes. These are the ones that are capable of thinking, making decisions, making plans, processing emotions. And we call this kind of your upstairs brain. So because those brain parts have different jobs, there's not a good brain and a bad brain. There's just a brain that thinks and a brain that acts. Sometimes our upstairs brain, that ability to have executive functioning skills to think and act and decide, flips. It stops working, it goes offline, and our downstairs brain is what takes over. That downstairs brain, because its job is to keep you safe, keep you alive, keep you functioning, that's the part of your brain also that's going to make your heart start to beat faster. It's the part that's going to make your face feel really red. Maybe it's going to tense your muscles. Maybe it's going to make you feel a big feeling, a big emotion, anger, sadness, frustration, those kind of things where you are just, the only thing you can think about is that big feeling. So if we're going to our situation where our child has had her head down on the floor, her hair was pulled, it's very unlikely that a student would say to another student, "Excuse me, I didn't like when you pulled my hair. Please move your foot away from me so that I can sit up." We teach our children that language when they have executive functioning skills available, and we hope that those neural pathways can engage and our students can use that language in order to communicate and solve their problem. But it is much more likely that that downstairs brain is going to come out. It's going to say, "Ow, that hurt. My hair was pulled. I'm mad. I'm going to push this person back," or "I'm mad. I'm going to scream, ow, as loud as I can." And that response is going to look different in different bodies. Sometimes for that child, it means that they're going to withdraw and they're just going to curl up and start crying because their hair hurts. Some of them, it means they might get up and they might push a chair over because, ouch, their body is hurting. And so knowing our students well, we talked about relationship building, knowing what their reaction is in times of stress is going to help you then understand which coping skill is going to be the most appropriate for them. So if you have that student who withdraws, who pulls in, who just starts crying because it hurt when their hair was pulled and their body is telling them, "You just need to freeze here until you're safe again," that connection that you can seek with them to find their eyes and look at them and say, "Hey, it seems like you're really hurting. What can we do to fix it? What can we do to get that upstairs brain to come right back down?" Maybe that's going to be a deep breath. Or if they're not capable of taking a deep breath in the moment, sometimes it's just modeling that deep breath for them. giving them some kind of sensory input. So let me squeeze your hands really tight. Oh, wow, that really hurt when your hair was pulled. Something that you can do, a coping strategy you can engage so that you get that executive functioning back. And then you can say, ooh, that seemed like it was a problem to solve. What can we do to make it different next time? Or what can we do to talk to this friend and help them? Similarly, if you have that student who their lid flips, their downstairs brain tells them, you got to get out of here. It's not safe. You were hurt. Your hair was pulled. Knowing that student, knowing them well, knowing what works for them, it might be pressure. It might be, I'm going to push down on your shoulders so you know that I'm here. You're with me. I'm safe. It might be, ooh, can you draw me a really quick picture of what that felt like in your body? Can you draw me, even if the page is just a bunch of scribbles and mush? Okay. Let's see now, how did that act of drawing, or how did that feeling, that pressure, that breath, get that upstairs brain back? Look at that. That's exactly the way that your brain was made to work. Your brain has different parts and they do different jobs. Your downstairs brain was trying to keep you safe when you got hurt. Now your upstairs brain can do the thinking. Let's see, how are we going to solve this problem? And again, it feels like a lot of work. It feels like, you know, hello, I have 20 students. I can't have a nice little conversation with this one because they're hurt. But the more that we, again, teach that language, the more that we teach those strategies, especially in a situation where our students are engaging their thinking brain, so that when those experiences occur, we can refer back to information that's already been taught rather than, oh, wow, they're going crazy. Let me teach them a coping strategy in this moment. But using the time that you have with your students wisely so that you can then engage those strategies in a meaningful way. You know, by the time this point in the year, I'm able to tell my students, hey, go take a break. Use a strategy, come back when you're ready. And that solves the problem immediately. They can go, they can do 5 jumping jacks and take their breath and come back and tell their friend, hey, I didn't like when you pulled my hair. And that really is a long, long process to get there, but so, so worth it as you're creating that community.
Wow, I hope you've really found some good nuggets and some good wisdom out of that. That is just part one with Jessica. Next week, we'll have part two, and I encourage you to come back and tune in because there's more gold where that came from.
If you're looking for ways to build more peace in your career, I've created a list of 75 affirmations based on 25 Bible scriptures, and I'd love to share it with you and help you keep your sanity. You can go to trishz.com/Bible-AFFS. That's AFFS for affirmations. I'll also leave the link in the show notes for you too. Until next time, my friend, stay grounded, stay regulated, and stay prayed up. Hey, amazing educators, thanks for tuning in. If you found this episode helpful, I'd love for you to hit subscribe and leave a review. Even better, share this episode with a colleague. And hey, I'd love to connect with you on social media. You can even join my Facebook group for some extra support and a dash of inspiration. I've left all the links in the show notes. Until next time, my friend, remember, you're not alone on this journey. You've got this. Keep making a difference and stay teach-tastic.